So we are holding on Yud Amud Bey's second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday that Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah that there's only, Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that there are three times for Bedikas Chametz, and we explained that doesn't mean he says that you have to do Bedikas Chametz each of those three times. It means that those are the only three times that you can do it, and if you miss those, then that's it. You shouldn't do Bedikas Chametz anymore. And we ended up saying the reason was, because Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that if you do Bedikas Chametz any later than that, any later than the time of Biur Chametz, then you might come to eat it. As opposed to the Chachamim, and the Mishnah said that no, you can continue, you can check, you can do Bedikas Chametz later on also if you didn't do it earlier. You can do it even B'soich HaMoyed or La'achar HaMoyed, which Rashi said meant during the sixth hour, which is the time of Biur, and La'achar HaMoyed would mean the rest of the day until Yom Tov begins. And according to Tosfos, B'soich HaMoyed meant any time from the sixth hour, from the seventh hour, from the afternoon of Erev Pesach all the way until the end of Yom Tov, and then La'achar HaMoyed would be after the Yom Tov, where you'd be searching for it in order to get rid of it, so because you're because it's Chametz Sha'avar all of our Pesach. So the point is, we're saying, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that if you're searching for chametz during Pesach or any time after the sixth hour on Erev Pesach, you might come to eat it. And the Chachamim don't seem to be concerned about that. So the Gemara asks, to me, gozer Rabbi Yehuda duma asi lamecha minei? Are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about that when you're dealing with something that's also to eat, you might come to eat it? V'atnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Menachos, Mishakara va'oimer, as soon as the oimer was brought, which at that point is when chodosh becomes mutter. Now we in Chutz La'aretz are not as familiar with chodosh because you have a machlokas aposkim whether it applies outside Eretz Yisrael, and we go according to the Bach and other achronim who say that it doesn't. Many people in the Velt, of course, are careful about it in Chutz La'aretz also. And Eretz Yisrael, it's applicable. And in the time when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, when did Chodosh become Mutter? Is when the Omer was brought. After the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the halacha is that it's also for the entire day of the 16th of Nisan and for B'nai Chutz La'aretz, for B'nai Chutz La'aretz to keep Chodosh also the 17th. Anyway, the Mishnah says, as soon as the Omer was brought, Yotzin, you could go out and find the marketplaces of Yerushalayim, that they are full of flour and toasted grain from Chodosh. Now, obviously, if they're selling it the moment that the Omer was brought, means that the harvesting and the processing and all was done before the Omer was brought, and therefore that was, in particular, the harvesting was done before. In fact, they would have had to do the harvesting before Yom Tov. And Rav Meir says they're doing that without the consent of the Chachamim. The Chachamim wouldn't have allowed that because they would say that while you're working with it, you might come to eat it. And that's also true. It's still Chodesh. Rabbi Yehuda says it was with the permission of the Chachamim. Because apparently, so he's not concerned. So he's not concerned that you might come to eat from it. Now, why not? If in the Mishnah over here, he's concerned that if you're being bodek chametz, you might eat from it, why aren't we concerned the same thing that as you're harvesting and processing and whatever the chodosh, that you might come to eat from it? The answer is Amar Rava. So Rava answers, Hagoris Abach changes it to Rabba, and in fact, in the parallel Gemara in Menachos, it does say Rabba. The Pnei Yeshua also has a reason, which we'll discuss soon, Bez Hashem, why here it's better to say Rabba. Anyway, Rabba is the previous generation, right? Anyway, he says, Shiny Chodosh. It's different when it comes to Chodosh. It's different than Chometz. Mitoch Shalohit. Because with Chodosh, you're not allowed to harvest it in the normal way. In fact, the Pasuk tells us that the Omer actually has to be Reishis Ktzirchem, has to be the first of your harvest. What are you allowed to do? You're allowed to pick the ears of grain directly for, you're allowed to pick the ears of grain by hand. So since you need to do it that way, since you can't harvest it, you can't cut it with a sickle as you normally would, who's Zachor, therefore you're going to remember that it's Chodosh and therefore you're not going to eat it. Omale Abaya says Tenach B'shas Ketifa. Okay, that explains when you're picking. That explains when you're picking the grain. You're not gonna forget. Tchina v'hakoda my ikal meimer. What are you gonna say when it comes to the grinding of it and the sifting of it? What are you going to do? What are you gonna have then? And we said in the mission after all that they were selling kemach flour. So what kind of shinui would they make with that? That meanwhile, while you're eating with it, you're not gonna munch on some of it. The answer is okay, hold like kasha. That's not a big kasha. Tchina berechaya diyad. You could say when it comes to the grinding, then instead they would use a hand mill instead of normally they would be able to use a water powered mill, one where the wheel is turned by a current of water. Or you also have the Gemara mentions in different places they had ones that were turned by animals, etc. Anyway, the point is they had larger ones that you would use. Let's say we would say you have to use a hand mill, and that'll remind you that it's different. And how koda gabe nafa, and when it comes to sifting it, fine. What you'll have to do is maybe you'll have to make a shinui instead of using the sieve to sift it right side up. You'll turn the sieve over and you'll turn the sieve over and sift through it that way. That would also be a shinui. That's true. You could tell the difference between solus and kemach, but the expression in the Mishnah was kemach v'koli. Because solus, So for the offering itself, for the korban ha'omer, they use actually what's called geres, which is, remember, it's barley flour. It's the equivalent grade to solus of wheat flour. Solus is the highest grade of wheat flour. Geres is the corresponding highest grade of barley flour. But that doesn't matter. The point is... No. We're talking about any of the chameshes aminim. Keep in mind the issue of chodosh applies, even though the Torah tells us, even though the korban ha'omer can be brought only from barley, but the din of chodosh applies to all the five grains. So among them is wheat, and from wheat you make kemach. Now, yeah, you can make solus as well, but that's neither here nor there. The point is they were selling kemach. The point is they were selling kemach, which is the lower quality stuff. That's what we think of as flour. No, they're hand picking ears of grain. So that's a shinui. Then when they come, so they do, it could be barley, it could be wheat, it could be any of the chameshes aminim. Yes, but here we're talking about what people are picking in order to sell in the marketplaces. We're not talking about for the carbon. Okay, maybe there's a little bit of confusion over here. Yeah, let's clarify. On the night before the 16th of Nisan, they would go and they would harvest barley for the korban ha'omer. That they harvest in the normal way with sickles. And you have the Mishnayos and Menachos describe the whole. They made a whole pageant out of it. They had three people and the magolze, kupazu, and they had a whole bunch of people gathering. That you're allowed to harvest in the normal way. That you're doing for the mitzvah of the omer. What we're talking about is, there would be other people who, before the omer was brought, would be going to their fields and were saying, picking. Now, they're not allowed to harvest the grain at that point before the korban omer, but they are allowed to pick ears of grain by hand. Then what they would do is they would be processing it to make flour and dried and to make flour and dried grain and whatever. Reb Meir is saying they shouldn't be doing that before the korban ha'omer is brought, apparently because they might come to eat from it. Reb Yehuda is not concerned about that, it seems, because Reb Yehuda says it was birtzon chachamim. So now, so far, what we're saying between Rava or Rabba and Abaya is that, Rabba is saying, since he has to pick it, he can't harvest it in the normal way. And let's assume also that when it comes to the grinding and the sifting of it, all of those have to be done with a shinui. That'll be enough to remind him not to eat from it. That is why Rabbi Yehuda, in that case, is not concerned that he might come to eat from it while he's working with it. So we're not talking about the korban ha'omer, we're talking about other grain that's not. Yeah. Okay. The question then is, so they're allowed to pick it with their hands, and Rabba is assuming that they're allowed to be grinding using a hand mill and sifting upside down. Yeah. The problem then is Ela Hodetnan. What about this? We learn in another Mishnah in that Perek in Menachos. Koitzrin Beis HaShochin. Now, like this, you have one of the rules as far as Menachos is that, and in general as far as Korbanos, is you're only supposed to bring from the best. Now, when it comes to grain, the best grain is not grown in the valleys. The best grain is grown on hillsides. Therefore, when it comes to using grain, whether it's wheat for korbanos year-round or whether it's barley for the korban ha'omer, it's supposed to be lachatchila. It should come from places. It shouldn't come from valleys. So it should come from fields that are naturally irrigated by rainwater, not ones where you have to irrigate them artificially. So therefore, grain from those places is not able to be brought from for the korban ha'omer. Actually, to be exact, Tosfos says b'di'evet it would be, but l'chila you can't. So therefore, it's considered to be a place from which you can't bring the omer. And therefore, the Mishnah says kotsun beis ha'sholchim. You're allowed to harvest grain from irrigated fields, v'sheba amokim, or from fields that are in the valleys. Those you're allowed to harvest normally with a sickle. But you're not allowed to make a stack of the grain before the omer is brought. So the katsira you're allowed to do. We're going to see soon in the Gemara why, but actually Rashi points out based on the Gemara over there, it's actually based on a pasuk. There are psukim over there that imply that you are allowed to do certain harvesting before the omer. On the other hand, we're saying the omer is supposed to be the first harvest. So the answer is it depends whether we're talking about grain that's suitable, that grows in a place that makes it suitable for the omer versus not. So if it grows in a beis ha'shochen or in a valley, where therefore you can't bring grade of that grain or flour of that grade for the korban ha'omer or for any other korban, then you're allowed to harvest it before the omer. But you're not allowed to make a stack of it, because the Gemara is going to say soon that when it comes to the harvesting, if you don't harvest it as soon as it's ready, it's going to get ruined. As opposed to the stacking, you can always wait till after the omer. There's no harm done if you leave it unstacked for a couple of days. Harvesting means with an actual sickle, yeah. If you leave it, growing longer than necessary, eventually it's going to get ruined, yeah. Now, in the Gemara there, we explain that Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to learn later on in Armasechta, we're going to learn about the people of Yericho who did certain things that the Chachamim approved. They did certain things that the Chachamim protested about and said that they're wrong, and certain other things which even though the Chachamim weren't happy with, they didn't protest. One of the things it says they did is that they would harvest their fields before the Omer. They would harvest and stack their grain before the Omer, and the Gemara explains over there that. We're going to learn it in the fourth parak of Amasechta. So the Gemara over there explains that Rabbi Yehuda says that the Mishnah that we're talking about over here, where it says that you're allowed to harvest but not stack, is according to Rabbi Yehuda. He's the one who talks about the detail of whether the Chachamim are protesting or not, what the Chachamim would approve of and what they don't. Anyway, the point is, my ikal meimar, so then what are you going to say? If you're saying the whole reason why Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it is because you're harvesting in a not usual way, but the fact is, okay, so that takes care of the problem of harvesting before the Omer, but you still have the problem, according to Rabbi Yehuda, of the gzeira d'rabbanan that you might come to eat from it. That applies equally well to grain that grows in a valley or an irrigated field or whatever. Those are also as chodosh until the Omer is brought. So therefore, what are you going to say now? You're harvesting, you have a field in a valley, you're harvesting in the normal way using a sickle. Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda concerned that you might come to eat from it while you're harvesting it or while you're processing it later on? So obviously it can't be that can't be the distinction. Ela Omer Abaya. So rather Abaya says the distinction is chodosh bodol minei, chometz le bodol minei. The difference is Abaya says chodosh, the person is more naturally going to keep away from it. Because after all, they haven't been used to eating this year's crop yet. They've known up until now that this year's crop is off limits until the Omer is brought. So they haven't gotten in the habit of eating it. So therefore, they're more likely to stay away from it. Earlier in the season, in other words, long before the Omer is brought, they're doing whatever with the grain. At any time when they're in the fields, they could pick a couple of ears of grain and eat them, but they don't because they remember the issue of chodosh. So now we're not concerned about it. Also, says Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to chametz, you eat the whole year round. Well, but if it's chodosh, then no, you can't. Right, so it's true. With truma and maisa, you're allowed to eat achilas arai before it's been processed, before it's roya pnei abayis or whatever. But chodosh isn't like that. Yeah. Okay, so then the question is, Omar Rava, did Rabbi Yehuda kasha, did Rabbanan like kasha? Okay, all this time you're dealing though with the contradiction in what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, that here in our Mishnah he seems to be concerned about you eating chametz, and in the Mishnah in Menachos he's not. He's not concerned about you eating chodosh. You also have to deal with the contradiction within the opinion of the Chachamim. The Chachamim of our Mishnah, Stam Mishnah of Meir, And anyway, when we have the Chachamim arguing over here in the Mishnah, it means all the other Bapashtus, it means all the other Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda's times, including Rabbi Meir. The Mishnah in Menachos, we have Rabbi Meir saying that it was Shaloi Beretzon Chachamim. So how do you explain that? Why there is Rabbi Meir concerned that you may eat from the Chadash while you're working with it? And over here, he's not concerned that you may eat from the Chametz while you're searching for it and finding it. So the Pnei Yeshua asks, why is Rava asking only on Abaya? Wouldn't the same question be on Rava's own answer? In fact, the question might be even more, because with Chodosh, we're saying you have to make a shinui, and even then, you can only harvest it by hand, and even then, Rav Meir is not allowing them to be doing it. To be processing it and selling it. So he says actually that's another reason why to say that before it was Rabba. And in fact, then Rava's question is not just on Abaya, it's on Rabba as well, both Rabba and Abaya. Why are you explaining only Rabbi Yehuda's, only the Stira in Rabbi Yehuda and not the Stira in the Chachamim? On the other hand, Slach says not necessarily. If we just had before Abaya's answer, we would say the logic is Chometz, we would say the logic is. That given that chametz is an issur kares and chodesh is only an issur lav, then fine. People are you're more concerned that they might eat chametz than you are that they might eat chodesh. Or the other way around, you could say that maybe since chodesh is only an issur lav, people are likely to be more careful. That's what it is. That since chodesh is only an issur lav, people are likely to be more careless with it, or likely to be less careful with it. But now that you're telling me, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that just the opposite. People are going to be more careful with Chodesh than with Chametz, because Chodesh they haven't eaten all year round, and Chametz they are. Then what's the, or the Chachamim, that why all of a sudden are we assuming that the Chachamim are the polar opposite of Rabbi Yehuda? Why would we assume Rabbi Meir is the polar opposite of Rabbi Yehuda and saying that no, Chametz people are that chametz people are going to be careful about, and they're not going to eat, and we don't have to worry about them eating it during the bedikah, and chodosh we are, which would be 180 degrees away from Rabbi Yehuda. So the Tzlach says the question could be only on Abaya's answer, not necessarily on the previous answer, whether it's from Rava or Rabba. Anyway, so the answer is, there's actually no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. Kiddush Haninon, fine, like we answered, because we're saying ultimately that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Chodosh you're going to stay away from because you haven't been used to eating it up until this point. Chometz not. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want you to be doing Bedikas Chometz after the Zman in our Mishnah, but he doesn't care about you working with Chodosh before the Omer in that Mishnah. Dirabbanan, Nami leKasha, and as far as the two opinions of the Chachamim of Reb Meir, here and there, respectively, also there's no Kasha, because why is Reb Meir in our Mishnah not concerned that if you search for Chametz later in the day or later on during Pesach, you might come to eat from it? The whole point is you're looking for the Chametz in order to burn it. Are you going to eat from it at the same time? That itself is the Heker that you're searching for it in order to destroy it. That itself will be the Heker not to eat from it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda doesn't take that into consideration. Rav Ashi Yama continues the Gemara. Rav Ashi gives another answer. So far we had Rava or Rabba's answer that you do in the case of Chodosh, you do with a Shinui. However, Abaya slugged that up because what do you do about fields that are in a valley where we don't find that you have to make a Shinui with the harvest? So Abaya had said the point is people are careful. People are more careful about Chodosh than about Chametz because Chodosh, they haven't been in the habit of eating from it all season, and Chametz they have. Rav Ashi is going to give a different answer. There's no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda because kemach v'koli tanan. Because after all, what did we mention in the Mishnah in Menachos that they were selling right after the Omer was brought? They had kemach, flour, v'koli, and toasted grain. And those are things that you don't eat on their own. The flour itself, you don't eat by itself. You make it into bread. The toasted grain also, usually what you do is Rashi says after it's been dried in the oven, it's not roy lechel. Actually, the Tosfos Rid asks on that. We find throughout Shas that they do eat kloyes. They used to eat them as a snack. So he says that maybe the girsa over here shouldn't be kemach v'koli, flour and toasted grain, but rather kemach koli, flour from toasted grain. So you could mix it. Once the grain is toasted, it becomes sweet, and then you make a flour from it, and it has a sweet taste. Fine, you can make you can make bread or cake or whatever out of it. You could put it, you could put it in certain kinds of drinks that it mentions in brachos and in other places, shisa and such like, but you're not going to eat it by itself. So therefore, Rav Ashi is saying, so Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned that you're going to eat from it while you have it available for sale, because it's not really edible. However, the Gemara says, Hodir Rav Ashi bedusa. However, this that Rav Ashi is saying, this bedusa, which literally means a fiction. So either that means, so one possibility is that one possibility, the Mefarshim say, you have this expression bedusa or berusa in a number of places in Shas. One possibility is that it can mean that Rav Ashi didn't actually say this. He, one of his Talmidim, incorrectly attributed it to him. There's a few places in Chancellor where you have an expression like that, bedusa. Some places the expression is borusa, which means like something outside, belongs outside the Bais Medrash. It doesn't belong in the Bais Medrash. Anyway, the point is, let's explain why what Rav Ashi is saying is bedusa, and then let's talk a little bit about this expression, why we're calling something that an Amora says, bedusa, a fiction. So anyway, the point is, the Gemara says, but first, hotenach mi koli ve'elach. Okay, that explains. Once it's made into koli, sure, you can't eat it anymore. Mi'ikra ad koli ma'ikla me'mer. Knew what is Rav Ashi going to answer what Rabbi Yehuda would say about the stages up until that point. So you're going to answer like we did earlier on the Amud, that since you have to pick it by hand, then that's going to be a shinui, and you're going to remember. We're back to the question about that you're allowed to harvest fields that are irrigated and fields that are in the valleys normally, because again, you can't bring karbonas from them. And we say that that Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda. Then how would Rav Ashi explain that? So we have to say that what Rav Ashi is saying is bedusa. Now, how do we use such an expression on something that an Amora says? So there's a vote from a Moshe Tzvi of Savran, one of the early Chassidish Rebbes. He was a Talmud of Rav Levi Yitzchak Peditchever. Anyway, he writes, in general, you find this expression bedusa in most places in Shas. It's actually in connection with something that Rav Ashi said. One or two places you find it in connection with other Amoraim of that generation. So he says, the vote is, that was the end of the time when they're transmitting Torah Shebaal Peh. From then on, after that, after the Chasimus HaGemara, then the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh is over. And then from then on, what we know of Torah Shebaal Peh is what's written down in the Mishnah and the Gemara and Braises and Midrashim and so forth. So usually when an Amora is teaching something, he's teaching something which is, it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So there's no arguing with that. I mean, there can be arguing with the applicability of it and with the details of it and whatever, but the din itself is a din. We can't call it bedusa. But when you have something that the Amora himself said from his own svara, and in a later generation, they're not great in the later generations after the Chasimus HaGemara, they're not great enough to have their svaras of their own and be part of Torah Shebaal Peh. Even in Rav Ashi's times, that stage was already beginning. So sometimes when he says something of his own svara, we end up saying it doesn't really work out. It's bedusa. Had he said it, this is Rav Moshe Tzvi of Savran, his name is. The Amora is what Rav Ashi was saying over here. Rav Ashi was saying, yeah. With that, the Gemara is saying, Bepashtos the Rabbanon Savaroi. The Bepashtos of the next generation after him, yeah. With that said, though, on the other hand, Reb Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, no. But Reb Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, says something that's almost the other way around. He says that no, it's all part of Chochmah Seir Tzonei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's still part of Torah. On the other hand, but the Eibishter himself decided when he gave this part of Torah that this particular part is bedusa. That's something that's not meant to be understood with our seichel. Therefore, we can't accept it by halacha. But it's still part of Torah, which is almost the opposite of what Rav Moshe Tzvi is saying. Okay. Anyway. So the bottom line is, we can't accept Rav Ashi's answer. We stick with Abaya's answer that Chodosh people are more likely to stay away from, and Chometz they're not, because Chodosh they've been used to, they can't eat the crop yet, and Chometz meanwhile you have the whole year round to eat.
What's the exact meaning of Bedusa?
The exact meaning of bedusa is a fiction, like boda. The word bedusa means like a fiction, like something that somebody made up. So one thing is, you know, how do we say something like that on Rav Ashi? It's not, one explanation is, it's not necessarily that Rav Ashi himself said it. he may have said something which is Talmidim incorrectly inferred from it this idea, but it's not really valid. In some other places in the Gemara, instead of the word bedusa, instead it uses the word barusa, which means the outside, which is in those places, Mefoshim explained, it's like a respectful way of saying this doesn't belong in the Mismedrash. Take it outside. That's also possible, that instead of Bedusa regularly, it should say Bedusa. So it could be. Okay.
And I thought you said one time it means a joke, but that
no,
was a different
no,
word.
Different word. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Onward. So the Gemara asks, "V'chol hecha d'lo bodo minei mi gozer Rabbi Yehuda?" So are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that any time you have something where you don't naturally stay away from it, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to be gozer, as we're saying by chametz, that because people regularly eat chametz throughout the year, therefore he's concerned that you might eat from it while you're being bodo chametz. Vatnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, lo yikav adam shveferes shal beitza, a person is not allowed to make a hole in an eggshell, or the Maharil says another possibility, shveferes shal beitza, which means a reed like a bamboo that grows in the swamps, whatever, you make a you use it as a reservoir, you make a hole in it, v'yimal ena shemen, you fill it up with oil, v'yitnena b'tzad haner, and put it next to a lamp, or actually not really b'tzad, and in the Mishnah in Shabbos, actually al pi haner, you suspend it over the lamp, b'shvil shetehe min ha-tefes, in order that it'll drip down into the lamp and it'll supply it with more oil. So you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to set such a thing up before Shabbos, va'afili hi shocheres, even if instead of an eggshell or a piece of bamboo, instead if you use an earthenware container. The point is, the Chachamim are concerned, the Tanakhama is concerned, that you might then use some of the oil on Shabbos. And if you take out some of the oil from that reservoir, then you're going to be over on the issue of Mechabe. There's actually a bit of discussion among Rishonim. What exactly are you over on? Because on the face of it, okay, you're taking away oil from the lamp. Isn't it grumma? It's more like an indirect thing because the oil is not actually in the lamp right now. So there's a few possibilities. Tosfos in Shabbos discusses that maybe as you're taking the oil, you're causing the flame itself to dim a little bit. So therefore, at that moment, you're over on Mechabe. It drips every couple of seconds, but whatever, as you're taking some of that oil, you're causing the flame, you have it, it's set up in such a way that it's close enough to the flame, so learns Tosfos that maybe therefore you're dimming the flame a little bit at that time. The Rosh gives another thing, he says that grumma would only be if it's something completely indirect, here the reservoir is directly feeding the flame, so it can't be considered grumma. The Rambam says it's because of muksa, whatever it is, the Chachamim don't allow it, even if the reservoir is made out of earthenware, which means therefore the oil will not be as clean. You won't necessarily use it for food. Even so, the Chachamim still make the Gzeira. But Rabbi Yehuda matter. But Rabbi Yehuda says it's allowed. Now, oil you use all the time. Now, when it comes to the Chachamim, there's no problem because we're saying usually the Chachamim might be concerned as well, but by Chametz they're not because you're in the process of finding it in order to burn it. So we understand why the Chachamim don't want to allow it over there. But why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing it? If we just established that according to Rabbi Yehuda, anything that loy bodol minei, anything that you don't stay away from, you might end up eating. So why isn't he concerned that you might take some of this oil and you're going to be chayiv? The answer is Hasam Mishum Chumr the Shabbos Mivdal B'dili. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda would say the Shabbos is an Isser Kodes, an Isser Skila. Therefore, you're going to be more careful with it, and you're not going to come to take oil from this reservoir. He says, okay. However, v'rami the Shabbos ad Shabbos. In that case, then we can find a stira regarding the dinim of Shabbos itself. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. If you have the rope attached to a bucket broke on Shabbos and you need to draw water, lo yehei kosher, you're not allowed to tie the rope again with a knot because that's one of the obvious malachas. Ela oinvo, you can only make a bow tie. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, korach olav punda psakia. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't make a bow tie. You can wind around it a punda, which Rashi says is a hollow belt, or a psakia, which is a garter that you put on your in those days when they didn't have elastic on their socks. They wore garters around the tops of their socks to keep them from falling off. So you wind that around the broken ends of the rope. You wind it around tightly. You don't tie it. Over vajshalo yan venu, but you can't make a bow tie. Actually, Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns that if you're using a punda or a psakia, then you are actually allowed to make a knot because it won't be a kesher shokayama. You're not going to leave your punda or psakia there for any length of time. You're going to tie it, draw the water, and then untie it. When he says avavad shelo yanvenu, he means the rope. If you wanted to retie the rope together, and the Tanakhama is saying that you can retie the two ends together in a bow, Rabbi Yehuda is not allowing. So kasha did Rabbi Yehuda, did Rabbi Yehuda, kasha did Rabbanon, did Rabbanon. So now we have a contradiction where Rabbi Yehuda is not allowing you to make a bow tie, presumably because you might come to make a knot, even though it's an Isser Shabbos, and Isser Shabbos we're saying is something that people are careful about. Meanwhile, the Chachamim by the oil are machmir, and here they're mekel. The answer is Dirabonan Adirabonan like Kasha. Dirachamim, there's no Kasha in their opinion, because they would say Shemin b'Shemin Michlaf. It's easy to confuse one oil with other oil. So you have the oils in the reservoir over here. You don't think of, but this is being used to feed the lamp, and therefore this is off limits, whereas this other oil is mutter and I'm allowed to take it. So you're likely to confuse one for the other. You're not going to confuse a bow tie with a knot. You're not going to say, if I'm allowed to do a bow tie, then I'm allowed to do a regular knot as well. They're very different. And Rabbi Yehuda, like Kasha, within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, there's no Kasha, because time of Rabbi Yehuda, lav mishum de gozer aniva otuk shira. It's not because Rabbi Yehuda says, don't make a bow tie because you might come to make a knot. Yeah, we're saying that when it comes to, that's the thing, right? Exactly. He holds that a bow tie is considered a knot lahalacha. So therefore, it's not a matter of a gzeira that you might come. That itself is something that's also on Shabbos. Now, with that said, the Gemara asks, chevel demai. Now, what kind of rope are we? I skipped the line. The rami did abonon ad rabonon. However, though, we still have a stira within the opinions of the chachamim. The Tanan, because we learn in a Mishnah in that same connection, koshrin dli b'psakya avaloi b'chevel. You're allowed to tie the bucket in order to draw water using a psakya, but avaloi b'chevel, but not with a rope. V'Rabbi Yehuda mati. Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to use a rope. A psakya, we just said, is a garter that a band that you put around your leg is called a psakya. There's a word in English, fascia or fascia, whatever, which means like a band or a ribbon or something. It's actually the same word. They both come from Latin. Yeah. So the Mishnah says over there, you're allowed to tie the bucket with a psakia, with a garter, avaloi b'chevel, but not with a rope. Rabbi Yehuda matir. Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to use a rope. Now, why can't you use a rope? Because you might. I don't know. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. But even if not, they, yeah. No, whatever. Okay. Anyway. So the Tanakhama is saying you can't use a rope because you might end up leaving it there, and then you made a knot. You made a permanent knot on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yehuda matir. Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it. Now we ask in the Gemara over there, chevel demai, what kind of rope are we talking about? Ilema chevel de alma, you're talking about a plain old rope. What do you mean, Rabbi Yehuda matir? Why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing you to tie it in place? Kesher shokayamo, it's going to be a permanent knot. Devade osilavatuli, you're for sure going to be mavatal it over there. And then you've done a malacha. Ela pshita de gaudi. Obviously, we're talking about a weaver's rope that a weaver uses at some point during the course of his malacha. He needs a rope, so it's not a normal rope. It's not something that you're going to leave. It's not something that you can use on an ongoing basis for drawing water. Maybe because it's not strong enough or whatever, or bepashtus because the weaver is going to need it after Shabbos. So the gozer rabbanon chevel de gaudi otu chevel de alma. And yet we see the Chachamim are making a gzera because you might confuse that with a regular rope. So what are you telling me that the Chachamim are fine with making a bow tie because it's different than a regular knot? A chevel de gaudi is different than a regular rope, and yet we see they are gozer. The answer is ain, yeah. Chevel bechevel mechlaf. After all, you could confuse one rope with another. I never bechshira le mechlafa, but a bow tie and a regular knot are so different that you're not going to confuse them. So now at this point, we understand everything that we have between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim were saying, any time that you might confuse things, then we're going to make a gzeira. That applies whether Shabbos or other Isurim. They don't care about the fact that Shabbos is more of an Isur Chamer. So therefore, when it comes to Chodosh, we're going to say you can't be working with Chodosh before the Omer, because you might come to eat from it. Because after all, some grain you're allowed to eat at that point, some you're not. You may confuse it. The same thing with the oil in the reservoir. The same thing with the rope. Chametz, they're not gonna have a problem with it. Chametz, they're not gonna have a problem because after all, you're in the process of finding it in order to burn it. And bow ties, they don't have a problem because a bow tie is much different than a knot. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, his perspective is. But his perspective is anything that people are going to stay away, anything that people are not going to naturally stay away from, we have to be gozer. Therefore, chametz, you eat year round, therefore he's gozer there. Chodosh, on the other hand, you stay away for. Shabbos, all of these things, you stay away from them because of the issue of Shabbos. The only exception is the bow tie, and that's because a bow tie itself is also. Okay. Now the question is, v'chol heicha debodomine legozer of Yehuda? So now, on the other hand, you're telling me that whenever a person does stay away from it, then Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer. This is the opposite of this is the inverse of the question we asked before. Before we were trying to show places where you don't stay away from it, like with the oil, and yet Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer. Now we have the other way around. Things where people do stay away from it, they avoid doing it, and Rabbi Yehuda is still gozer. So why is he not doing that by Chodosh? V'hotanya, actually V'hotanan, because it's a Mishnah in Bechoros. Bechorosh ochze dam. A bechor that was seized by blood, which means it has high blood pressure, for example, and therefore you have to let blood for it immediately, or it could die from it. Afilahu mes, then the din is even if the animal is going to die. And remember, if a bechor dies, we're talking about the bechor is already in the possession of the kohen. He's just waiting for it to develop a mum, but only then can he shecht it and eat it. The problem is, we're choshed koinim to make a mum in a bechor because they want to get it over and done with so they can shecht it and eat it. But also bechlal, there's an isser daraisa to make a mum in kodshim. So therefore, and the problem is when you're making a puncture for bloodletting, you might do it in a way that makes a mum. Therefore, afiluhu mes en mekizin leidam divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda then says that even if the animal is going to die if you don't let blood, you're not allowed to do it, says Rabbi Yehuda, because you might do it in a place where it makes a mum. You might do it in a... Okay. So Rabbi Yehuda says that you can't let blood even in that case because we make... Now, kodshim, people stay away from. Kodshim, people are not going to be careless with. And still, Rabbi Yehuda says that we make a gzeira because you might do it in a place where it's going to make a mum. But the chum say you could let blood over vajla yato by mum as long as you do it in a place where it doesn't make a mum. Now, I forgot to mention before. Well, I mentioned it briefly that the Rameyer is allowing things. Rameyer is allowing things where there's going to be hefsid. So, for example, in the case of chodesh, even though Rameyer doesn't want you stacking the grain or grinding it or sifting it or whatever before the omer is brought, but allow you to harvest it if it's in a beis hashochen or whatever because otherwise there's a hefsid. It's going to get ruined altogether. The same thing over here. Rameyer is going to allow because the animal is going to die if you don't let blood. Therefore, he's going to allow it. On the Stab Alachaim also, but fine, yeah. So we see, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda is making a gzera, even by Kodshim, which people are more careful with. You have, by the way, the Mishnah mentions there a third opinion, that Rabbi Shimon says you would actually be allowed to let blood for it anywhere, whether it's a place that makes a mum or not, because he says, in effect, the animal already, so to speak, has, because he says that you're doing it for the sake of refuah. So therefore, it's not a problem if it ends up making a mum. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda is the most machmir. He says you can't do it at all. So why? If it's something that people stay away from, and yet he's gozer. The answer is hosam etech sha'odam bohol amamonai. The difference is because there, and a person is in a panic about his mammon. This kohen is in a panic. If I don't do something right away, this bechor is going to die, and then I'm going to be left with something with an animal that I can't do anything with. You can't even, by the way, if a bechor dies, you can't even feed it to animals or anything because it was kodshim. You have to bury it. So he doesn't want to have to do that. But yeah, so I'm Rinnan. So we say, so if you allow him to make him to do the bloodletting in a place where it's not going to make him mum, he might end up doing it in a place where it is going to make him mum. For example, the lip or other places, the ear or whatever other places that'll make it a mum. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want to allow it altogether. So this is a new factor that we didn't consider before, where you're bohol. V'rabbanan, what are the rabbanan answer to that? They say just the opposite. Koshikin, de'ilo shortest like klal, if you don't allow him to do anything at all, osi lameba, then he's going to do it in the wrong place. At least allow him to do it in a place where it's not going to make a mum, and then that way, they'll take away some of his panic, and he'll do it the right way. Okay. So now the question is, now that we brought in this factor that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned where a person is bohol amamoina, that he might do the wrong thing, and therefore he makes a gzera, do we really say that according to Rabbi Yehuda? Vatnan, we learn in a Mishnah, in Beitza, Rabbi Yehuda Omer en Makadrin, or Makardin, really it's supposed to be, with the resh before the Dalet, Abahema b'yumtiv, you're not allowed to makarid an animal on yumtiv. We're going to explain in a second that kirud and kirtzuf are two ways of combing combing the animal with a comb. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to do kirud on yumtiv, because that causes a wound on the animal, and that would be a malacha. Aval makautzefin, but you're allowed to do makautzefin, which is with a different kind of comb, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second. The Chum say you can't do either one, because again, Adam Bohol Amamona, if you allowed one, you might allow the other. And we learn in a Braisa, Ezo Kidur, the Ezo Kirud, the Ezo Kirtzuf. What's the difference between them? Why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing one and not the other? Kidur is Ketanim. Kidur is you use a comb with small teeth, the Oisin Chabura, and as you're scraping the animal with it, as you're taking this comb and combing and scraping off the mud and whatever from the animal, it's very likely to make a wound, to scrape the animal's skin, and therefore you're doing a malacha. Now, certain malachas you're allowed on yomtov, but this isn't malachas oichel nefesh, and there's no mitoichir either. So therefore, you're not allowed to. As opposed to kirtzuf gdolim vein oisin chabura, kirtzuf involves using a comb with larger teeth. Those ones, they're not as sharp, so therefore they're less likely to make a chabura. So the point is, Rabbi Yehuda is not saying, so now the Chachamim are saying that if you do one, you might come to do the other one, and therefore it's also. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, is allowing the one with the large teeth and not the small one. Now, why? Adam Bohol Amamone. The answer is, the difference is, Hossam over there, in the case of the Bechur, De'ish Shavik Le'mayis, if you don't do something for the Bechur, if you don't let blood for it, Mayis, then the animal is going to die. I'm in an Adam Bohol Amamone. Then we're saying a person is in a panic and he might do the wrong thing, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is going to make a Gzera. Hacha, but over here, you're talking about just combing off the mud and dirt and bugs and whatever off the animal. So if you leave it and you don't curry down the animal like that, tsaira ba'alma, who it's only the animal is going to have, or is only going to be a little uncomfortable. Yehuda is not going to say adam bohol. So we go back to the usual thing that if it's something that a person is going to be careful about, which yomtiv after all is an isur lav, so he's going to be more careful about it. So therefore, we're not gozer one that if he does one, he might be allowed the other. Therefore, we allow him the kirtzuf, which is with a comb with using larger teeth. But blood not, because again, blood, the animal might die without it, and he might be in such a panic that he's going to do it in the wrong place. That he's going to do it in a place that makes the animal a mum. Yeah, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbeinu Hananel over here gives a different explanation of kirud and kirtzuf. We're talking about, in both cases, we're dealing with there are bugs that are attached to the animal's skin, like ticks or other such things, but you have large, the gdolim versus ketanim are, you have large ones where you can remove them without injuring the animal, and then you have smaller ones, which are more like ticks or whatever, which are more tightly attached, and as you pull them off the animal's skin, you're going to rip off a little skin and make it bleed a little bit. Same idea, in other words, the point is, so one is making a chabura, one is not. Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer that if you do one, you might come to do the other. The chachamim are concerned about that. Okay. The last thing is then, no, then why is it by chametz he's concerned you might eat it, and by kirtzof he's not concerned that you might use, that you might do kidur instead, which is with smaller teeth or smaller bugs or whatever, and you might come to make a chabura. The answer is lechem belechem mechlef. He would say that bread you might confuse with bread. If you're allowed to eat bread, you're allowed to eat bread during the rest of the year. Therefore, you may come to eat it on Pesach. Kidur, but kirtzuf, like mechlef. But on the other hand, kidur and kirtzuf use two different kinds of combs, or they involve two different kinds of bugs, and therefore you're less likely to confuse them. Whereas the Chum say you still might confuse them. Right, because again, they're Odom Bohol Amamone. So now the bottom line is, we say that Rabbi Yehuda would say, where a person is boidol from it, where a person stays away from it, for example, Chodosh, where he's been in the habit of staying away from it, then he's allowed to. Also, where he stays away from it because of the chumrah of it, for example, with Shabbos, with the oil over there. On the other hand, where bohol amamone, where the animal is going to die, for example, then not where the animal is just going to be uncomfortable. Well, ultimately with bread you might confuse it, but not Rabbi Yehuda is saying that kirur and kirtzof are different enough that you're not going to confuse him. Okay, Mishnah says Reb Meir im oichlin kol chametz v'sor from the tchilas sheish. Reb Meir says you're allowed to eat chametz. Now we learned before that d'oraisa you're not allowed to eat chametz from the end of the sixth hour of Erev Pesach, from chatzos of Erev Pesach. However, we're going to see that the Chachamim put in a safety margin, because you might have that you don't know on a cloudy day, for example, what time it is. So the mayor says, Oichlin kol chametz, you're allowed to eat chametz the entire fifth hour of the day, and then you burn the chametz at the beginning of the sixth hour. So the point is, the mayor is saying, the seventh hour, it's already going to be also daraisa. You might confuse the sixth with the seventh hour. Therefore, we don't want you to be eating chametz or having enough from it during that time. You should be burning it. The fifth hour, the mayor says, is far enough away from the seventh that you're not going to confuse them, and therefore it should be fine. To put it in modern terms, chatzos erev Pesach nowadays, when we have daylight savings, is usually around 1 o'clock. We're talking shoyis zmanias here, according to most rishonim and achronim. We're talking shoyis zmanias over here, where you divide the day into 12 hours. The machlokes whether you divide from nets until tzeisa kachavim, which is the Alter Rebbe and the Vilna Gaon hold that way, or whether you go from alois hashachar until tzeis, which is how the Magen Avraham holds. That's why you have in the calendars. You have, for example, seif zman krishma and seif zman tefila, whatever. You have two different times. Anyway, chatzos these days around 1. A Shah's Zmanis around Pesach time is around 60 minutes, give or take. So the end of the fifth hour would be, the end of the fifth hour is an hour before Chatzos, so around 12. So the mayor is saying that during the fifth hour, from 11 to 12, you're still allowed to eat chametz. A little after 12, you should be burning it, and that way you're done with it by the time it comes 1 o'clock, by the time it comes Chatzos. But you don't need more of a safety margin than that, he says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no, Oichlin kol arba, you're allowed to eat during the entire fourth hour of the day, so let's say until 11 o'clock. The Tolin kol chomish, during the entire fifth hour, it's suspended. You can't eat it, but you don't have to burn it yet either. At that point, as we're going to learn in the next parak, you're allowed to still feed it to animals, you're allowed to sell it to a goy, etc. So that would be during the fifth hour, from 11 to 12. The sofer mitchilas sheish, and then a little after 12, you start burning it. What we do nowadays, actually, is we burn it a little bit earlier. We burn it before the end of the fifth hour, and the reason for that is because we want to be able to do bittul afterwards. We want to be able to say kol chamira afterwards. We learned before that once the beginning of the sixth hour comes, midrabbanan, it's off limits, then you can't be mevatel it anymore. So in order to be mevatel after the burning, like we want to, then we finish the burning before the end of the fifth hour. So in our example over here, a little before 12 o'clock, let's say. Usually Seif Zman Biur Chametz comes out like 11:40 or 11:45 or so, yeah. Okay. So Rabbi Yehuda, in short, is saying when it comes to eating, we have to have a margin of 2 hours safety. When it comes to having enough, fine, then 1 hour is enough. V'oid Amar Rabbi Yehuda, also Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll give you an example of where we see that there's a difference between the time when you can eat and the time when you can't eat, but you don't have to burn yet. In the times of the Bismik, the shtei chalos shel toida psulos, two posel chalos from a korban toida. Now, a korban toida is brought with 30 chalos of matzah and 10 of chametz. So they would take two of the chametz ones, which were posel, and we'll learn in the Gemara eventually what made them posel, and they would put them al munochas al gavah itztava. They would place them on Erev Pesach on top of the itztava. The itztava they had rows of benches surrounding the harabai on the edge around the edges of the harabais, on the inside inside the walls of the harabais, going all around. Those benches, they had pillars in front of those benches, and the pillars supported a roof. So you had, the idea was that this way, it's in English, such a thing is called a colonnade. So they had a colonnade surrounding the harabais on all sides. One idea is this way people could sit there. You're not allowed to sit in the Azorah, but you're allowed to sit in the harabais. So they had these benches with a roof over them. So they would put the chalas on top of that roof. So it's high up. The Beis Mikdash was the highest point of the city, or almost the highest point. So this way everybody could see them. As long as both chalas were there, it means it's not the end of the fourth hour yet. So everybody would still be eating chametz. Once they took one of them away, then they would suspend the chametz, stop eating. They couldn't eat it anymore, but they didn't have to start burning it yet. And once both of them were removed, and then everybody would start burning their chametz. So we see, says Rabbi Huda, that they actually did it that way. They actually had that extra safety margin of one extra hour that you can't eat. Which is, of course, how we have nowadays, which that's the halacha, which is why we have in the calendar Sof Zman Achilas Chametz, and then about an hour later, Sof Zman Biur Chametz. Ram Gamliel says, it depends. When you said, I agree that there is a point with certain kind of chametz that you can't eat it after 4 hours, but it depends. It's not a matter of, not like Rav Meir says there's no shzera at all, not like Rabbi Huda says it applies across the board, but chulin ne'echol in kol arba, chulin you can only eat during the 4 hours until 11 o'clock, or truma kol chomesh, but we give you an extra hour to eat chomets of truma, because after all, as long as you can eat them, you're not allowed to burn, as long as you can eat truma, you're not allowed to burn it. So we shouldn't be goyzer that you can't eat truma during that 1 hour. Then you burn everything, chulin and truma, at the beginning of the sixth hour. So according to Rav Gamliel, you can eat chulin until 11 o'clock, and you can eat truma, chametz of truma, until 12 o'clock. And then you burn it right after that. Okay. Because that's the thing. Truma, we're giving an extra hour because, after all, you have a mitzvah, ushmautim es mishmeres trumoisai. You have to guard truma and not destroy it if you don't have to. So as long as you don't have to, so okay, fine. The Rebbe Gamliel agrees the chachamim have to build in a safety margin because you might mix up 1 hour with another because it might be cloudy or whatever, as the Gemara is now going to discuss. But we don't want to make, when it comes to cholin, fine, we can say you have to stop 2 hours before the Zman Dor Isa. But when it comes to Truma, he wants to say that you should only have to stop 1 hour before. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara is going to now start a discussion based on a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which eventually we're going to relate back to our Mishnah. We'll start the discussion today and continue it tomorrow, Bez Hashem. The Gemara says, Tznan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, suppose two Edim come to Beis Din, saying, let's say that Reuven killed Shimon. One of them says it took place on the second day of the month, and the other one says it was on the third day. That's not necessarily a contradiction. Edus and Kayemis. The Edus is valid. Now, when Beis Din would interrogate the Edim, they would ask them seven basic questions. It's called Hakiros, to establish the time and place of it. And then they would ask them a bunch of other questions that are called Bedikas. Among the seven Hakiros are the day of the week, the day of the month, the year, etc. So let's say the two Edim matched up perfectly on everything. It was on Wednesday. It was in the year, it was a day in Kislev in the year Tufshin Pei Aleph, et cetera, et cetera. The only thing is one of them says it was Wednesday Beis Kislev, and the other one says it was Wednesday Gimel Kislev. So that's not necessarily a contradiction because Edus and Kayemis, the Edus is valid. It could be one of them knows that the previous month was 30 days and the other one doesn't. He thinks it was a 29-day month. So therefore, they're a day off. Now, Rashi explains, usually Beis Din has the responsibility to try and refute the Edim however possible, because we want to save the guy's life, the Hitzilo Eda. But in this case, where they got all the other details the same, and this is the only detail on which they're differing, then we have to say that there's no way that we can't say that refutes their Edus. We have to necessarily say that it's because they don't, because one knows and one doesn't. Tosfos also adds, actually, that the Gemara elsewhere in Sanhedrin says that most people that most people don't know whether the previous month was 29 or 30 days until the Gemara says until the middle of the month. So the fact that you have a rove of people who don't know that is reason enough to say that therefore we can't contradict their edus. On the other hand, echad omer b'shloisha ve'echad omer b'hei, but if one of them says it was on Gimel Kislev and the other one says Hey Kislev, edusen b'teila, then their edus is batal, because then there's no way. Obviously one of them is making a mistake or lying or whatever. Now the edim themselves are not going to be in trouble because they're not edim zoymin, but nevertheless the person himself that they're testifying against, we can't execute him on the basis of such edus. We don't say, by the way, that you might have that maybe the previous 2 months were Chadosh and Malayim, and one guy knows of that and the other one doesn't, because by the time the middle of the month comes, everybody knows what the previous month was. On the other hand, so that's as far as days. Now, the Gemara is just bringing that because the Gemara is bringing the whole Mishnah, but what we're going to focus on is the next case in the Mishnah that talks about a difference as far as hours. Echad omer b'shtei shoyis ve'echad omer b'sholosh shoyis. If one of them said it took place in the second hour of the day, and the other one says it took place during the third hour, edus and kayemus, the edus is still valid, as we're going to discuss soon why. On the other hand, echad omer b'sholosh ve'echad omer b'chamesh, but if one says it was during the third hour and the other one says during the fifth hour, then their edus is batal because they're too far apart. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, edus and kayemus. Rabbi Yehuda says that the edus is still valid because a person could make a mistake, because they could make a mistake. They could make a mistake to that of 2 hours. That's what we're going to discuss, and that's how we're going to relate it back to our Mishnah. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, echad omer b'chomesh ve'echad omer b'sheva. If one says it was during the fifth hour and the other one says during the seventh hour, then edus and b'teila, then their edus is batal, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Shebachomesh chama b'mizrach v'sheva chama b'mayrav, because during the fifth hour the sun is still on the east side of the sky. On the seventh hour already it's after chatzos, the sun is on the west side of the sky. So that's something easy to tell, and there's no way that we can assume that the aid made a mistake on the hour based on that. Omar Abaye, if you analyze this machloikas of Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, it comes out like this. L'divir Rav Meir ein adam toya v'loy klum. According to Rav Meir, we don't assume that a person would make a mistake in the time at all. So why does he allow the second and the third hour? We're going to see in a second. L'divir Rabbi Yehuda adam toya chatzi sha. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, we can assume a person would make a mistake up to half an hour. Namely, L'divir Rav Meir ein adam toya v'loy klum. Why does Rav Meir allow an edus where one of them says the second hour and one of them says the third hour? Because the thing must have happened when the second hour is ending and the third hour is starting. In other words, let's say at exactly 3 o'clock. So one aide is calling it the second hour because it's the very end of the, or let's say 2 o'clock actually, whatever. So one of them is calling it the second hour because it's the very end of the second hour, and the other one is calling it the third hour because it's the very beginning of the third hour. So according to the mayor, that we can accept, but not more than that. V'hodik omer shtayim means v'soif shtayim. So the one who says that it was the second hour means the end of the second hour. V'hodik omer sholosh b'tchilas sholosh. The one who says three means the beginning of the third hour. But the mayor will not allow any more leeway than that. Now, the Gemara is going to ask later, which we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, what do we mean? We should ask them, do you mean the beginning of the second hour? Do you mean the end of the second hour? Do you mean the beginning of the third? Do you mean the end of the third? How can we just say, because he says second, we're allowed to assume it means the end of the second hour, and because he says third, it means you're allowed to... So we'll get to that. We'll get to that tomorrow, Best Hashem. But according to Abaya, so far we're saying, yeah, according to the mayor, we don't allow any more leeway than that. On the other hand, l'divir Rabbi Yehuda, onam toya chatzi shah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we could say a person could make a mistake up to half an hour. Ma'aseki hava b'palga d'arba hava. When we can assume the thing happened, let's say, in the middle of the fourth hour. So let's say 3:30. V'hai d'ka'ama sholosh b'soif sholosh. So the one who says it was in the third hour means at the end of the third hour, at 3 o'clock, let's say. V'katoi palga d'shaita, v'katoi palga d'shaita l'kamei. So he said a half hour early. He said 3 o'clock when he should have said 3:30. The one who says the fifth hour means the very beginning of the fifth hour, four o'clock. So he's mistaken that he's calling it 4 o'clock when really it was 3:30. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says you can accept such edus. Ikadamri, that's one version of what Abaya said. Another version is Amar Abaya, Kshetim Tzalayim, L'divir Abmeyo, Odom Toya Mashu. According to Abmeyo, we could say a person would make a mistake of a Mashu of a few minutes. L'divir Abyehuda, Odom Toya Shou Mashu. And according to Abyehuda, the leeway that we allow is an hour and a little bit. Namely, L'divir Abmeyo, Odom Toya Mashu, Maisiki Hava, Oy Besoif Shtayim Hava, Oy Betchilas Shalosh, that it happened either almost at the end of the second hour or almost at the beginning of the third, so 2:59 or 3:01. Because how likely is it? I think Tosfos Arosh says, come on, the first version is saying it would have had to happen exactly at 3:00. How likely is it that it happened exactly at that moment? It's more likely it was 2:58, 2:59, 3:01, 3:02, whatever. So it was at the end of the second hour, the beginning of the third. So one of them is making a little bit of a mistake. One of them is saying it was at the end of the second hour because it was correct. It was at 2:59. The other one is watched. It was a few minutes off. So he's saying it was 3:00. It was during the fourth hour, but meaning it was 3:01, but really it was actually 2:59. So that's fine. L'divir Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Toya Shou Mashu. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a person might make a mistake of up to an hour and a little bit. Namely, Rabbi Yehuda, who is allowing if one aide says the third hour and the other one says the fifth hour, so either it happened at the end of the third hour at 3:59 or at the beginning of the fifth hour, 5:01. One of them is an hour and a little bit off. So one of them says it was during the third hour, it was at 3:59, which is correct. The other one says the fifth hour, meaning 5:01. His watch is wrong. It's really, really the time was 3:59, but his watch, his not watch, they didn't have watches in those days, but whatever, when he looked at the sun, he mistook its position and thought that it was an hour, that it was an hour later when it was 5:01. So those are two versions of how Abaya learns the machlokes. And then we'll talk about tomorrow, Best Hashem, how Rava disagrees with that and presents a different understanding of the machlokas. And then once we have that, then we're going to relate it back to our Mishnah and see why Rav Meir needs you to have a leeway of only an hour when it comes to not eating chametz, and Rav Yehuda is requiring 2 hours, which actually seems to be the opposite, because in the case of the Eidos, Rav Meir is allowing very little mistake, and Rav Yehuda is allowing much more leeway. So we're going to get into all that tomorrow, Best Hashem. Yeah.